I'm Stargate Pioneer from Voices of Defiance, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio, now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 109 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we spend 80% of the podcast baffled by an invasion of foliage, a lost and seemingly telepathic little girl, and her inexplicable connection to the trees and solar flare. Then figure out that there is nothing to worry about and spend the rest of the time doing absolutely nothing and watching it all play out. I'm your host, Haley Malley, and joining me in the GPR studios this week is Jay Witten. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm doing all right. And Keir Hansen, how are you today?
Shh, hold on. I'm hearing something. That the voices are telling me that I need to go plant a Groot.
Take a tablet.
So this week we're discussing the latest episode of Doctor Who from the Grimm Brothers, In the Force of the Night. This fanciful episode was actually came from the esteemed children's author Frank Cottrell Boyce. And this is the final episode before the two-part finale, and it's given us the room to breathe before we finally come face to face with the mysterious Missy. But did it go too far and actually make us really need a nap beforehand as well?
I had to take a nap before I could rewatch it.
All right. So let's just go around the table here and ask, like, Haley, what was your thought on this episode?
Meh.
All right. Verbose as
okay. Wow. Fantastic. Well, she's hit her word quota for the night.
Yeah, I took the whole intro. I'm good to go.
Keir, what about you?
I was okay with it, and I will explain why through the course of our discussion, but I was actually quite okay with this episode.
Okay. I'm kind of the same way. I mean, there were moments where I was caught a little off guard, and I'm like, really? So we're just taking the science completely out of science fiction here, right? And it wasn't until I realized that this really is a fairy tale. Like, this whole story is a fairy tale in a Doctor Who episode. And if you can look at it from that viewpoint, it's a lot more enjoyable.
See, I felt like there were several points where they could have, like, done something really interesting, and then they just dropped it. And we're like, never mind.
Like, you were expecting it to start heading towards a particular explanation, not necessarily a solution. Okay.
When they were in the forest and he was like, the forest is mankind's nightmare or whatever he was saying. I was like, ooh, are they going to do something with that? Like, the forest has been this menacing force on this planet for all this time. Nope.
Yeah.
And then when the little fairy light people came, I kind of thought it was going to be the same fairies that we saw in Torchwood way back.
Oh, that would have been dark.
It was just something completely different that looked very similar.
That could have actually been a very dark route to take this. Been like, oh no, the only girl who's been, you know, the fairies have been talking to this whole time, who lost her sister, now has to be taken in order to save the whole planet. Like, that could have gone very dark.
Yeah. Well, we never really officially got any sort of an explanation from our little lightning bugs.
No, not
as
really.
To what they were.
They just said that we are here. Like that, yeah. I've heard him referred to as the here. So apparently that's what we're calling him.
Right.
Another I'd great still name.
Say
that's,
I was going to say it's better than Mowgli's.
On the grand scheme of crap villain names, and they're not even villains because we know they've been a protective element, and we get that.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe that's one of the key components that's going to have people kind of torn on this one, is because of the fact that the threat was something completely natural. You know, there was nobody has altered the course of space and time. No one has, put the ability of some fantastic weapon into the hands of a race or species that is unprepared to wield it or anything of that sort. This was a solar flare.
Yeah.
That's your threat.
Well, and this whole series has been relatively light on the villain aspect. I mean, if you think about it, the Deep Breath, we had the robots that were just trying to, like, you know, finish making their ship and going about it in a dastardly way. But, you know, then, I mean, the only real threat in that whole episode was the Tyrannosaurus, which the Doctor brought. You know, then into the Daleks. I mean, obviously Daleks are villains, so yes, we got one there. The robots in, you know, Robots of Sherwood, sure. Then we got to Listen, and there was nothing there. Yeah, nothing really causing a problem there.
As far as we've been able to definitively
there was
nothing there. Except for a kid under a bed, or was it?
There was no, you know, I'm going to face down this villain in that one. You know, and then next was Time Heist, correct?
Correct.
So, and, you know, that we've got this whole, you know, evil banker woman, but it turns out that she was actually working with the Doctor the whole time just to make this work out. Then, you know, we move forward, and the only other villain that we've really had were the Boneless last week. So, right. I mean, the Mummy turned out to be just a soldier that was, you know, reanimated by broken tech. Yeah, I mean, there hasn't really been any solid villains this series.
Solid. I like that. That's funny. Kind of, you know, because the Boneless didn't have bones.
You like what I did there? Solid.
That's clever. So, but I mean, with this one, not only do you have sort of the lack of a definitive villain that you could stand up to and have your Sermon on the Mount, but your solution didn't even involve us.
Yeah, don't do
it.
Anything.
It was kind of like, you know, calm down, shut up, go get yourself something cold to drink. It's going to be a little warm for a little while. As the Doctor says, you're going to have a couple of days of some trippy sunsets.
Yep.
And things are going to go back to usual. And right now, geophysicists and meteorologists and other scientific professionals around the world are tearing their eyes out of their skulls over this explanation. But this comes back to something we were talking about.
Magic trees, got it.
Yeah. So this goes back to something that we've been discussing a lot over the course of this season in particular, and it's a risk you run with a Monster of the Week kind of a thing, is you want to use some sciencey-wyancey stuff. You want to have a little bit of explanation in there as to, ooh, what could possibly be going on, or ooh, what could the solution be, without using too much science. You know, the Moon episode was one that I think we can all agree went too far into trying to put a plausible explanation and solution to it.
Yep.
And that's what helped it fall apart. Did this happen again?
Kinda. I feel like if he hadn't said the part about how the trees were going to save us, if he just said the trees were going to save us, it would have worked better. But he tried to explain it.
But for, you know, for people that aren't well-versed in, you know, astrophysics and things like that, or, you know, just that aren't real big into how science actually works, for people that just accept, okay, this is what science is, sure, this could have worked. You know, it's like, oh, okay, there's going to be like a big air shield. Got it. I mean, they don't understand what an oxygen-rich atmosphere actually does to people, so they can buy that. So it's, are you going to play for the people that accept science as an everyday fact but don't really study it, or are you going to go after the ones who are really going to pick it apart?
Okay. I guess, to a certain degree, maybe there were more aspects of this episode that I was able to genuinely enjoy that kept me distracted enough that I was not as overtly yanked out of the episode as I might have been during Kill the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that might have been because of the fact, and I got to give a lot of credit to Boyce on this, as far as, and this was my concern when I saw where this episode was headed in the previews and things, like, oh my God, half the cast is going to be kids under the age of 12.
This like could be a disaster.
Yeah, this could be a disaster. Not only, and I'm not saying in terms of, you know, the child actor's performance. I'm talking about from a writing perspective, because if you don't get the voice of kids right, you can tell immediately that it just sounds forced
this
or contrived.
This is a line coming from an adult forced out of the mouth of a kid.
Yeah, Kewick, this shot, blah blah. Yeah. You end up with Artie and Angie.
Exactly. But bored.
Right. Shut up. It's nothing. but I've got to say, I genuinely enjoyed a lot of the banter with the kids talking to the adults trying to talk to the kids, the fact that these kids all had some issues, you know, his allergy to nuts or whatever it was. You know, that was entertaining. I think it had a good kid's voice through this.
Yeah. And I mean, even though we had like 10 or 12 kids running around, we only really got four of them really taking an active part in the episode. You know, so it's not like there was, you know, this great room for disaster coming from any one of these kids. It's, the rest of them were clearly just extras, and they're like, we give voice to four kids and they're going to speak for the whole class, you know. So it did actually work pretty well. I mean, they weren't obnoxious. They were not any more than, you know, what eighth graders should have been. Yeah. So, but this whole episode was, I adored the direction of it because it was done in a very fanciful way. I mean, there were a lot of shots that you don't see in Doctor Who, like when Maeve first gets in the TARDIS and they're going around the outer catwalk.
Yeah. They walked almost the full circumference of the
and
thing.
That was all done with a handheld cam, which you never see that in Doctor Who. They never do that kind of thing. It's always got to be a stationary camera or a, you know, on tracks or whatnot. And then a lot of the time, most of the episode was shot, if not from a low vantage point, from a upward facing angle. So it's almost like the whole episode took place from the kid's eye view. And this is one that is absolutely great. Let's be honest. I'm not going to let my kids sit down and watch Flatline from last week because that's terrifying. I mean, I'm still having moments of like, I don't want to get too close to the wall, but this is one I'm absolutely going to make sure that they sit down and watch because it is perfect for them. You know, I've got a 12-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old, and I think they could all find something to enjoy with it.
Maybe there was some rhyme and reason to this type of an episode right now. Maybe not necessarily in this slot within the season, but the fact that the season in general had to have something that gave this growing number of younger viewers, or this reviving number of younger viewers, or maybe it is growing. Maybe this is the largest of that sort of demographic that the show has had, as far as I know. I don't really know a lot of the statistics behind it, but you hear all the time about 8-year-old viewers that have been watching it for as long as I can remember. Well, how long is that really? You're 8. But these under the age of 12 viewers that are fascinated by the show that might not be able to connect as well right now with Capaldi, you know, and they're looking for that link. They're looking for that bit of an anchor. And then you have an episode where 2/3 of the cast is their peers. And it's something that's kind of catered towards their fears, their concerns. I just want to go see my mom and dad. You know, how am I going to get home again? Kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I did love the line from Maeve when the doctor says something about the trees don't communicate. And you know, it goes into the, you know, do they put a group post on tree Facebook or something? And she's like, you know, you don't need to talk to communicate. You know, I can't talk to my mom, but I know that she's worried about me. And the doctor sits and they dragged it out just long enough for him to be sitting
there. He gets that face.
Like, no, you're wrong because but if you've got a point.
Yeah, and he has to just kind of shrug. All right, let's go.
And I mean, how many times did we get admissions from the doctor that he got it wrong this episode?
Yeah, that seemed to be one of his kind of go-tos. He's like, yeah, I get it. I was wrong. Can we move on with the thing?
So what were some of these specific things that you really enjoyed about this episode, Kier?
Well, again, you know, a lot of it kind of revolves around the kids. I mean, Maeve as a character, I adored from the get-go. This is the kind of child character that I love to see in these sort of episodes because she's scared. You know, she's got that genuine kind of fear of something that she feels is a genuine threat, but she's not completely helpless. You know, she's got a certain amount of intuitiveness to her. You know, she leaves the breadcrumb trails, you know, of all of her belongings along the way, a pencil case and whatnot. But the casting of the kids, I genuinely enjoyed. And just, you know, I like the way her character was written, you know. That's one of those kids that, you know, maybe it's from my personal background, my experience, I would want to do anything necessary to protect her. You know, I genuinely was concerned, especially when she was running from the wolves. That was a scene that in particular really bothered me, more so than I thought it would. As I was watching it through, you know, I was genuinely concerned for her because the way that they were, you know, the way that they had edited it and the way that it was, that chase sequence was being done, I thought, you know what, I care so much more about this child in danger right now than I did about the Rings of Akaten kid.
Well, she was kind of obnoxious, so.
No, but I mean, it's just a different way of treating that child in distress, mm-hmm. kind of an angle. And then the whole idea of the, it brought out an aspect of the doctor where he reluctantly had to come around to actually recognizing the fact that she was an individual of value, because he couldn't even be bothered to recognize her as a creature bearing a name to begin with. You, have you got a name at all? You know, at all? Or do they just call you, or you know?
Or his first interaction with her when she knocked on the door, he opens the door and she's like, I need help. And he just points randomly. It's that way. Yeah. Shuts the door again.
Yeah. Ready to just write it all off. Mm-hmm. But by the time, and then you get to the next point where they realize that she's not in the TARDIS and they have to find her. So he like puts all the children in a lineup. Maeve, and he looks one in the eye. No, that's a boy. And the next one, Maeve. No, that's a kid with freckles. And then it gets down to Ruby at the end. He figures that's close enough. It's one of those female looking faces. And he's like, you, Maeve. And then she, you know, Ruby yells something out like, oh, Maeve is dead. She's going to die. Whatever. And realizes he's got the wrong one. Crap. He's got to go back and figure it all out again. That's a great moment as far as the doctor realizing all these humans look alike to me, you know, it's all, you know, that I kind of enjoyed in light of all of the threats and the concerns and the solar flare radiation coming down to hit our, you know, green airbag or whatever. But those moments were ones that I could take away from the episode and say, yeah, Capaldi was having some fun with this one, because he probably does not get to work with kids often. And It was great to see his spiky, chilly demeanor slowly being broken down by these relentless kids.
That's one.
He got to work with kids and children of Earth.
Oh yeah, how'd that work out for them?
Super.
Too soon. No, but that's one thing that we did bring up a lot before, was that, you know, Matt Smith was great with kids. Like, he was the and that's because he was basically a kid himself.
Yeah.
You know, this time I love any time that Capaldi's on screen with a kid, because it is always that, you know, I'm going to talk to you like you're a grown person. And if you don't get it, then that just gives me a right to insult you. And it, I mean, honestly, that's kind of the way that I talk to my kids. You know, anytime I have to deal with children of any sort, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm going to explain to you exactly what's going on. And then I'm going to turn around and walk away, and you're welcome to do whatever you want with it. You know,
I don't think, if you were to really take it apart, he doesn't treat human children any differently than he does human adults. He just talks lower. Mm-hmm. He has aim his head downward, but he gives them the same degree of disdain.
They're all pudding heads.
Yeah. They're all just these pudding brained, just mouth breathers that just might pick up on a couple of words of what he's saying and get the general gist of his tone. And if they don't get it, natural selection is going to pick them all off. So be it.
So, Haley, what about you? What did you think about this episode? What were some of the things that you enjoyed or didn't enjoy?
I didn't enjoy the science, but
go
it's
figure.
Okay.
The scientist doesn't like the way that they use science in this show.
I did like towards the end of the episode where he's talking to Clara and he, you know, he turns around on his point from Kill the Moon. He said, this is my world too. I walk your earth. I breathe your air. Mm-hmm. It's as close to him saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong, as we'll probably ever get. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one part that got me when it first happened, when he first said, this is my home too. I literally did the, like, I turned and threw my hands up and looked at my wife, even though I was wearing headphones and she couldn't hear anything that was going on. I was like, really? And then he brought up that, you know, I walk your earth. I breathe your air. And I was like, oh, okay.
It's that's intentional.
Yeah. But it did catch me off guard when he first did it. But then I'm like, oh, we're seeing growth here. This is growth. Okay. But apparently there are some people who have been very upset about that fact that, you know, oh, he's just flip-flopping on what he said a couple episodes ago.
It's called development.
Well, apparently we're not allowed to have that in Doctor Who.
It's called career politician. He's waffling. All right. Well, then let's ask this, because it is going to be one of those elephants in the room. The Danny clear up. You've been lying to me. Yes, I've been lying to you. Oh, but look, adventure over there.
I really did not think he was going to take that this well.
I don't think he should have taken it this now, well.
Did he? The best way I can phrase it is he seemed to have gone from badass to doormat. It's like he's had this whole problem, and every time that he's caught her lying to him before, he's been very upset, and he's like, look, I don't deal with this stuff. You need to stop lying to me or else. And then she does it again, and it's like, okay, but this is your last chance. And then she does it again, and he's like, look, take your time. Come tell me the truth whenever you're ready. Like, really, dude? You should have been out the door two times ago.
It'd be much easier on your disposition there if you just cut and run.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, when he said, you know, I've had my adventures, I'm ready to just be a homebody now, pretty much. It shows that he's at a very different place than Claire is at this point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. And I do like the way that they explain that, too, that he's, you know, this is why he hasn't gotten on the TARDIS. He doesn't care about any of that stuff anymore. You know, so it has given his character a lot of credence in that aspect.
Right. And so far, our projection that he will not travel in the TARDIS has held.
Yeah. Yep. So.
I and again, going back, you know, kids are completely unfazed by the TARDIS. Yeah. A forest wasn't there, and then it was.
Although I do like the explanation the doctor gives to Maeve when she first comes in. You know how you get a soda that's this size, but it's got this much sugar? Kind of works like that.
Yeah.
That's one of the best descriptions I've ever heard.
There you go.
But the one major problem I had with this episode was the fact that Clara wants all the kids to die so that they don't have to miss their moms and dads for the rest of their lives. Like, I thought she had a responsibility to care.
Well, how exactly was she seeing the possible outcome? So she's seeing them being able to spend their final moments with their family. So this is kind of the inverse of the whole Pompeii thing.
Yeah.
Do you try to rescue them and have a few survivors? What, to send them off to, you know, Space Academy for the gifted and talented? Yeah. Or do you send them back to their families so that they can at least have that final moment? And that's it. Yeah. I guess that becomes an individual moral decision, which is really a better call, because some people could feel very emphatically that, you know, if it's all a matter of, if everything's all said and done, I want everyone close to me. No, if everything's all said and done, there's a chance for anyone to survive, get them out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call, but it just seemed so different than the whole, you know, she seems like the kind of person who would want to take care of the kids and, you know, save them at all costs kind of thing.
Hmm.
You know, I don't see her as the kind of, you know, I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way, and it didn't jive with the rest of her character.
And they've got a space and time traveling box. Why don't they just go pick up the kids' parents?
Well, because, and that just gets to one of the only lines that really bothered me, was because Clara outright said, we've got the TARDIS. It's essentially a lifeboat, isn't it? And it's not. And that has been stressed over and over and over again, that if you were to just start saying, oh, just everybody in, I got infinite space, just pack them all in here.
Acres and acres of space.
Yeah.
The show would be dramatically different.
Yeah. But, I think that it was one of those things that was a calculated thing on her part, was like, I can, you know, if we get the kids there, the doctor's going to save them. He's been around these kids for, like, you know, 40 minutes. He's going to care. He's not going to just leave them to burn. So, you know, I can say we're going to save them, and he's actually going to go along with this plan.
Hmm.
But I don't know. It was one of those things. There were moments in that whole exchange that I really, really enjoyed. Like the fact that Clara was, you know, that she said, like, flat out told him, I don't want to be the last of my kind.
Really, yeah. I think that was the point of that whole plot, so she could say, I don't want to be the last of my kind.
Yeah.
Which I'm still going to buck against, because, and the doctor said it too, you know, when you're saying, you know, it's the trouble with being the last of your kind is you have no one to talk to when your TARDIS doesn't start, or what have you. He's not. And we're ignoring a massive plot point that we established over the series break.
Yeah, this is actually a discussion I've been having with the Scott the Hockey Guy on the Gunny Geek forums. Mm-hmm. And that's the fact that we brought Peter Capaldi in, and he's a tremendous actor, and we want him to have a chance to really shine in this role. And it's not something that we want to, you know, say, oh, hey, look, we've got this tremendous actor, now pay attention to Gallifrey. You know, we don't want him associated with all the, yeah, with all the jerks that exist in the Time Lord community. So we want him to really be able to establish his doctor before we start bringing everyone else in.
Well, but then if that's going to be the case, then you've got to figure out where your stress points are, or you've got to realize when you need to touch in on these threads that you've started. Mm-hmm. You can't put something out there like that and then just ignore it for 10 full episodes, and yet you still keep hammering on, where'd you get the phone number from? You know, oh, it was a woman in the shop. You know, and that one you're going to keep hammering on. Mm-hmm. But the fact that your entire effing planet is just slightly to the left of where you are right now. You know, but that's not important, nor does he even acknowledge that they still exist because he's still calling himself the last of his kind.
Unless Missy is a Time Lord, which is a possibility, I don't think they're going to address it until the Christmas episode at the earliest.
Mm. Yeah, that's probably the case. I just don't know if that's necessarily best executed.
I don't think it is. They need to have at least touched on it at this point.
Yeah, and explain that, you know, I saw what was going to happen if I bring them back. I have to prepare for them to come back, so I'm not, you know, there's things I have to deal with now. Then I'll prepare to bring them back so that we don't start the Time War all over again. Like, mention something to that. Just even name check it, because at this point, that's what we've gotten. The Doctor has seen, crap, if they come back, things are going to go bad quick. So I can't bring them back. That's the whole reason why he didn't tell them his name and you know, time of the Doctor.
Right.
So, you know, just mention that. Say, no, I have to be able to prepare for them to come back before I go on this hunt. So it's going to take some time. Yeah. You know, if they had just mentioned that at some point, then I think we'd all be better off right now.
Yeah.
But I don't know. One of the other things that bothered me, and not enough to like really take me out of the episode, but after a while I was thinking about it and it was just like, it just didn't sit well with me. I don't know if it didn't, you know, if it didn't fit, but it just didn't sit well with me. The fact that, you know, the Doctor got in the TARDIS and left and just, you know, he was okay with letting Earth burn. And I understand, like, you can't fight a solar flare, but it just seems like one of those things, like, the Doctor wouldn't just say, oh man, I really liked humanity too. Oh well, time to find a new race.
I don't really know how to react to that one, because this Doctor has been so unusual about his grand moral standings.
Yeah.
Or unusual, maybe unpredictable or unexpected as to how he reacts to them. And then you're always left at the end of it all wondering whether he knew something more all along. In this particular case, he really didn't know. It wasn't until, you know, he came to the whole, you know, oh, Dr. Idiot.
Yep.
Answer to the age-old question, Doctor Who? Doctor Idiot.
Apparently, yeah.
But yeah, I guess that didn't really stand out as I was watching it. I guess I was spending more time kind of waiting for, all right, what's going to be the big whiz-bang solution to this one?
Apparently sitting around and doing nothing.
Yeah. Right,
now, take your hands, put them on your chair. Now sit on them. No, but I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. I don't think that it's something that wasn't right for the character. It just rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay.
So that's personal opinion. I'm not saying that anyone else should feel that way.
That's fair, though. I mean, especially after, you know, or within the same context as his explanations about, you know, his growing or renewed or remembered affinity for the planet that he's currently standing on. And the tremendous amount of oxygen that he's breathing at the moment, because, man, that air, they should have been high.
Who says they weren't? I mean, there were no fairies. I'm sorry.
Sure, I'm seeing. Just wave your hands around your head, kid. Yeah, I really hope that there was some specific decision making as to why he makes some of these really odd calls that he's been making this series.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see how it plays out. I mean, the one thing that I will say that was good about this episode is it did give us the chance to breathe. I mean, last week's episode was intense. I mean, it really was. And then we're going to go into something that they've been, you know, very, very nicely, you know, building up without doing any actual work. I mean, we're all primed and ready to see what the solution is to this with about, I'd say, a grand total of 3 minutes of screen time. Mm. Yeah. So I think we needed this chance to sit back and be like, well, that was, you know, that was an interesting little ride. Okay. Now I'm ready for what comes next.
Right. Well, then, do we want to start to think about what we've been seeing of what comes next? I'm not even really sure what to think.
I'm not either, because, again, we don't see, like, aside from the fact that she seemed flustered or, you know, upset, again, nothing villainous from Missy. She didn't say anything like, well, that was disappointing. She just said it was a surprise. Mm-hmm. That's all. And it's like, what are we getting here? I still have no clue.
Yeah. Okay. I guess the only thing that you can take out of this is the fact that she's definitely not omniscient.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever it is, she's, you know, if there have been the theories out there that she is somehow a time lady or something of that sort, you know, she is lacking in the ability to have that kind of forethought or being able to...
Foreknowledge. You
know, the foreknowledge of these events taking place. Her claimed ownership of Clara or whatever connection that she has there is all the weirder now.
Yeah.
The fact that she didn't see the outcome, meaning that she was aware of the events going on and was expecting, planning for something. Oh, we're going to have an influx of people into the Nethersphere here. Oh, the desks are going to be very busy.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of paperwork to process. But
yeah, it's hard to get a handle on what we're really going to be getting. Cause, you know, it's, yes, they're building it up to be like, this is the villain. This is, she's a bad person, but she's never done anything explicitly bad. So. No. You know, there's still that chance of, well, are they going to throw us a curveball at the last minute?
She's just a mysterious character, capital M, capital C.
What do you think, Haley?
At this point, I don't know. Like, I've been like, well, is she like maybe an older Clara or an older other Clara? Is she a time lady? Is she death? I don't know. Is she the great intelligence? But that doesn't seem likely at this point.
Yeah.
If they were going to go that route, and I was having this discussion with someone the other day about this, about the fact that they never really wrapped up the how did things turn out with the GI, that they would have, I think the consensus was that they would have made some sort of an overt reference to that unfinished chapter to sort of remind the audience that that threat is still kicking around somewhere.
Yeah, I think at this point we're just supposed to accept the fact that, you know, Clara took care of any instance of him creeping up ever again.
Right. So we've got a lot coming at us next week.
Yeah, a little bit. Apparently Clara never existed, which,
yeah,
that's interesting.
As far as scenes from the next trailer editing, this was probably the most confusing editing job of handing me material. You almost wanted to watch it at half frame rate speed to try and take in what was going on.
Yeah.
I know that the frame by frame analyses, if they're not out today, then they'll be out by tomorrow morning for certain.
Yeah. Quick to the tumblers.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting. And I mean, I can't believe we're already here. Like it seems like this whole series has just flown by.
Mm.
And you know, it's, with the exception, the personal exception of Robots of Sherwood, it's been a heck of a ride. I mean, there haven't really been any big missteps for me with the exception of that one episode.
And even that one had its moments that you could enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, yeah.
Like, I really don't think there's any episode this season that if I were going to rewatch it, I'd be like, oh, I'm just going to skip that one.
I might skip Robot.
But Robots of Sherwood.
Yeah. But yeah, it's not one of those that it's like if somebody turned it on while I was in the room, I wouldn't like get up and exit the room, but I'm not going to go and seek it out.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the rest of this whole series is highly rewatchable.
Well, did we have any kind of a voices from listeners about either this episode or ones we've been talking about recently? I mean, just talking about reviewing.
Well, we did get some feedback as a comment on our last episode from Basil. He said, I really enjoyed this episode, talking about Flatline. In fact, I've enjoyed every one of these episodes this season, and I'm really liking Capaldi. He's definitely my favorite of the, quote, new doctors since The Return. And I like how he capitalizes The Return, like it's major. he seems like a classic doctor for some reason.
Well, but we also have to make sure that we thank Sean for correcting us on, well, correcting, enlightening, educating us on the terminology of sleeveless jumpers or tank tops
Yeah.
Or sweater vests.
Again, whatever. Whoever the heck decided that we speak the same language was an idiot. Yeah. Because that is not the case. Then we did get some feedback on this episode, and unfortunately, Preston did not enjoy. He said, okay, the forest episode sucks. Doesn't really feel like there's anything at stake this entire season. The finale better rock.
Hmm. That's a requirement.
Yeah. So, but I don't agree. I think that there's not really anything big saying, no, this is at stake right now. But, something is coming to the,
You mentioned it, or you're sort of, I'm paraphrasing. This is a quick breather.
Yeah.
We came off of an intense episode. This one was a fairy tale. It was a children's story with a little more intensity, effing tigers.
and wolves.
That's what fairy tales originally were, though. So.
Yeah, precisely. And then gives you just a second to be able to say, all right, we've got our wits about us. Everything has magically been restored back to the way it was, including the older sister who popped out of the bushes. Yay! And then, into all the lunacy that is going to be the next two episodes. I guess we've been discussing all of the threads that have been kind of carried along and things that we're hoping to see, come to fruition. I'm kind of concerned that because of the fact that Clara and Danny just kind of got over everything so nicely at the end of this, it kind of cut the legs out from what I was hoping was going to be happening in the finale, where they really have a big row about it and against his better judgment, Danny has to jump in to be the saving force, kind of like he was with a torch in this episode. But on a grander scale, or the doctor has to recruit him because he needs a soldier to do what needs to be done, But I don't know if we're going to have that now because they've kind of smoothed everything over so quickly and easily.
Yeah.
The only thing would be if she decided she wanted to really travel in the TARDIS full time for a while, then that would drive a wedge between them. But I just don't see that happening at this point.
It's not you, it's me.
Well, everything's kind of up in the air at this point, because we know that Anderson said he wants to come back and play Danny. He's open to that, so he's not confirmed for Series 9. Right. Clara's not confirmed for Series 9. So, this could go a number of ways, and we have no way of telling just yet.
Except watching.
Who wants to do that? Jeez. I just listen to Doctor Who podcasts. It fills me all in.
Just spoil it already.
He hasn't even watched an episode this season. He just reads the synopsis.
Pretty much, yeah. I got stuff to do, man. Can't be bothered with some no-name British television show. Jeez.
I don't even tell you the name of the main character. Good grief.
They left it that way because they didn't think it was going to make it.
No, but apparently a lot of people had that same thought, though, that there was no point in watching, because apparently the overnights were 5.03 million for In the Forest of the Night, which is the lowest so far. No, I'm sorry. It's not. I lied. I do that. Rule number one. Rule number one of GPR. Jay lies. So 5.03 million, which is...
Which one was lower?
Actually, good number of them now that I'm looking at it correctly. I was looking at the wrong numbers, sorry.
Numbers are hard.
Yeah. It's lower than any of the final numbers, apparently. But the final number for Flatline last week was actually 6.71 million, and it had an AI of 85. So both of the Jamie Matheson episodes got an AI of 85, which is higher than anything else this series so far.
So we will be... viewing more from the pen of Mr. Matheson next series, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, but yeah, this is 5.03, which is actually above 4.6 overnight last week. So, it'd be interesting to see where it falls in the scale on the final. Mm-hmm. We finally got some live plus sevens for episodes 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
They're all sitting about, let's see, Into the Dalek got 8.2. So we got just shy of another million added from the final for that one. Robot of Sherwood got 8.25, which again, just, it's the exact same amount too. It's 0.97 million over the final. interesting coincidence. And then let's see, Listen got 7.8 over the 7.01. So,
right.
Yeah. So not huge jumps, but still.
But that one had a big jump from the overnight to the final.
Right. The overnight went from 4.8 to 7.01. So yeah, it's interesting, but. Yeah, I'll I can't wait to see what the final and the AI get on this one, because I've heard a lot of mixed reviews, and this is another one of those where people either, you know, nobody really loved it though. It was either people were lukewarm about it, or, you know, relatively enjoyed it, or they couldn't stand it. I haven't heard anyone saying this was absolutely fantastic yet.
I've got to imagine that most of the people that were in the poo-poo camp, which is not the camp that you probably want to set up your tent,
probably not,
are the same people who railed hard against Kill the Moon for obvious reasons.
That yeah. They just,
I actually had to check to see if this one was the same writer, because it had a very similar feel.
Yeah.
I really feel like this one was a fairy tale where Kill the Moon was trying to be hard science fiction and failing miserably.
Yeah.
So
this was Jumanji. It was a children's adventure story with magical forests.
Yeah. But it worked for what it was.
Yeah.
So what kind of news do we have this week? Oh, the big news of the week being that apparently AMC decided that BBC America is very worthwhile investment, and they actually paid $200 million for a 49.9% stake in BBC America. So that's actually a controlling, they're going to be in charge of BBC America now and running it as a separate network.
That's very weird. Just the whole structure of the BBC owned, maintained, and operated stateside by another broadcast network entirely on behalf of the British broadcast.
Well, it kind of makes sense if you think about how a lot of cable packages get made. You know, they bundle channels together. Because wasn't AMC the channel that got dropped by Dish Network not too long ago? Like a couple years back?
Yeah, less than 2 years ago they got into the battle. Yeah, well, because they wanted to increase their licensing costs.
So this would give them more bargaining power if they were ever in a similar situation again.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. But this leaves BBC Worldwide with 50.1% ownership. So they're still the majority owners of the channel, but AMC will be operational control, basically. So
right. Which means it is now Chris Hardwick all day, every day, discussing everything.
Hey, we know you just watched a show. Here's Chris Hardwick talking about that show. Now here's Chris Hardwick talking about Chris Hardwick talking about the show.
Welcome back from the commercial break. Let's talk about those commercials you just saw.
You know, my main thing is I'm hoping that this means that BBC America will start getting put on some of the lower tier packages. Because right now with AT&T, I know I've got to get like, I think it's like
the top one.
Yeah, it's like 300 some odd channels. And I'm like, I just want the freaking one. Like, I don't need all the. So I'm hoping they lower that. But
Maybe they'll start having like web streaming and stuff in the States as well.
What? That's asking too much. That's ridiculous.
But that's making a bold assumption that internet thing is actually going to work out.
This internet thing's never going to catch on. Having what you want when you want it.
No. I ran the numbers on my slide rule here. Not going to, no.
Funny story. I had a computer science professor telling me about his professor who said these calculator things were a flash in the pan. It would never catch on.
You think they're going to pry this abacus out of my cold, dead hands?
Yeah, I had a second grade teacher who told me that I wasn't going to be able to carry a calculator with me at all times.
It's all about slide rules and log tables.
Yeah. Oof. Oh, and then the next bit of news we got, apparently there's going to be an online Doctor Who game now. It's called The Doctor and the Dalek. And this is all on the CBBC website. You can play it online actually right now. It's actually live now. They will be coming out with a tablet version later, but this is a game that's geared more towards kids.
So, just looking at this screenshot, is it kind of like Gizmos and Gadgets?
I don't know. I haven't actually tried it yet.
Because that would be awesome. I love that game.
Well, I was trying to play it last week when it was only available within the UK. Like every website keeps saying, come check it out, come check it out, come check it out. Not you. Here, turn around, go back home.
We don't want your kind here.
I just wanted to look at the screenshots.
It's interesting that, I mean, the BBC has really started to reach out to the younger audiences. With this, with some of the, a lot of the toys. Like, I found Doctor Who toys in Walgreens a couple weeks ago. Like, Walgreens, it just, I don't know. But, they really are starting to reach for that younger audience and, you know, hook them while they're young kind of thing.
So there's hope for that Paternoster Gang spinoff yet, kids.
Yeah, but I mean, even the Doctor Who stories that came out last year, you know, the short stories, like, I mean, those were all done by young, by children's authors or young adult authors or whatever, you want to call them. So it's definitely an interesting trend. And then the last bit of, well, we'll call this non-news. I stumbled across this thing, and apparently someone at Hypable decided that they needed to rank the doctors from worst to best.
We're going to stop right here.
That couldn't possibly end poorly.
Yeah, because it came from Hypable, which is essentially, along with BuzzFeed, are like the internet equivalent of the Daily Sun. So we're just here to rankle you and get you to say, no, because then at least you're talking about us.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just designed to send you down a click hole when you read somebody's article on Facebook.
Yeah. That too. Yeah. But I mean, this is the kind of thing. I mean, I put the subtitle in the show notes, AKA how to piss off every damn Whovian. Because that's the fundamental thing about Whovians is we are physically incapable of agreeing on aspects of Doctor Who.
No.
So if you take the doctors and rank them like this, I'm sitting here looking at it and I'm like, okay, yes, maybe. What? No. Like by the time I get to the third one, I'm like, no, that is way too low. This is not. And then 8 makes it worse. And then 7, I'm like, come on, really? And yeah, it's. Yeah.
Show me superlatives and I'll show you a flamethrower. That's
yeah,
just ridiculous.
So, but I mean, this is just a way to, like, you know, get people upset and put the comments. And I mean, I'm sitting here looking at some of the comments on here.
I scrolled down to the comments. I feel like this is more taboo than a mom saying they have a favorite child.
All wrong. It is a 13-way tie for first place. Yeah, some of the comments in here, it was just, you can tell that all this is clickbait. People, it's like, no, they're going to come here and they're going to argue about it. We're going to get more people on. Yeah.
So we put this link in here. Don't click on it. Just imagine that it's going to piss you off.
Yeah. Or if you need something to get you really pissed off before a scene or something like that, it's there. It just, yeah. This is in no way hard news. I found it interesting that someone would actually have the cojones to say, hey, I've got the solid doctor rankings here. Yeah. But anyway, so that's all the news we've got this week. But so you guys have anything to say in wrapping up?
I'm just going to spend the next few days, every couple of hours, watching scenes from the next week and writing down. Each time I do it, I'm going to write a totally different hypothesis down on a little post-it note and shove it in my pocket and watch to see how wrong every single one of them is going to be by next Saturday.
At this point, I'm done theorizing. I just want them to tell me now. Now.
See, answers, please.
I'm actually starting a betting pool, and so we're going to be watching next week, you know, trying to figure it out. It's like, all right, who had the reincarnated Ronnie? Okay, you get $50. Yeah, it'll be fun.
We should totally do that. We should set up a bingo board or something.
Very much so, yeah. But we'd love to hear your theories and what you thought about this episode, what you think is coming. So please hit us up in any one of the ways that we have in the outro here. Definitely go to the Gunny Geek forums. There's a lot of discussion that's starting to go on over there, not only about Doctor Who, but a lot of other great shows too. So please feel
like
free
to... Like The Flash, and if you want to hear about The Flash, you could listen to my new podcast, Crimson Comet.
Yeah, or you can go over to Starling Tribune and listen to me talk about Arrow, which is clearly the superior show.
Or you can come over to my house and hear me talk about anything. I'll be that guy rambling on my front stoop.
Just talking to the chickens.
All right. Well, this has been episode 109 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, we'll help if you stop calling us a team.
This is Gear saying, on behalf of this world, you're very welcome.
And this is Haley saying, I hope I'm right. It would be slightly awkward if the Earth was destroyed at this point.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1-GPR. You can also go to GunnaGeek.com to check out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.